The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Hi, everybody. Happy Wednesday. This is Real Life Real Estate Investing, and I am your host today, Tiffany Ray, subbing for the real estate goddess herself, Vina Jones Cox. And boy, let me tell you guys, we are in for a really good strategy talk today. So I'm excited about this show because typically I'm talking to someone and they're on phone, but I happen to have the guest in studio with me. And so it's Scott Ellsworth from Ellsworth & Associates, and we are both proud members of the REIA, Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati, servicing us with 22 focus groups and all things real estate. And if you want to know more about that, you can take a look at our calendar and our series of events at reia.com. So I'm just going to take a moment to say welcome, Scott. Thank you for coming. And we're excited to talk tax strategy today.
All right, Tiffany, glad to be here.
Yeah. So let's jump right into it. So I see that we do have a couple of emails, and I'm going to invite you guys to go ahead and give us a call if you have questions. The toll-free number is 1-877-772-9658. And then, of course, if you cannot, we will take your email question at Vina, V-E-N-A, radio at gmail.com. First, I'd like to talk to Scott about this looming thing over all of us with these LLCs and sole proprietors out here, and that is the Corporate Transparency Act. So, Scott, I've heard some things about some appeals, and maybe there's an injunction, and maybe we don't have to file this thing by the 31st. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you think?
So there's two court cases. One of them, the first one entailed a group, one of the participants in it, was NFIB, and they had ruled that it was unconstitutional for them. And so FinCEN decided they would only grant it for those folks because the court somewhat limited that. Well, it actually got a couple people thinking, like, should I join the NFIB? But then every entity would have to join, so that wasn't going to work. So then there was another court case that came out, and that court – which I believe was in Texas, basically made an injunction for nationally. So until it's settled. And there's always a thing, right? Something comes out and everybody goes to the internet and is it real? Is it not? But if you actually want to, if you go to FinCEN's website, which I did and then I posted it, if anybody is a friend of me on Facebook, but I posted the actual information from FinCEN, who said they sort of acquiesced and said, okay, you don't have to file right now. You're not being subject to any penalties until this thing is resolved. And so they've acknowledged it. There's no penalties. You don't have to do it. You can still optionally do it if you want to. That's a whole big thing, whether you think you should or not. And it is not that difficult, but it is full of landmines. If you just don't, you know, if I've got a business and I've got somebody running my business, I've got to put all their personal information in because they have a beneficial interest in the company. So it becomes an issue. And then there's, well, if my manager moves and he doesn't tell me, well, that's a problem. And so I could be subject to penalty. And what the biggest thing that I will point out to people is, let's say you're a couple, you're 68 years old, and you bought four rental properties through your life, and that's your retirement, and you don't know about this beneficial ownership registering. Well, here's the problem. 2 years down the road, because it's $500 a day. 2 years down the road, you find out you didn't do it and you're supposed to, the IRS could, or the government, FinCEN, could issue you a penalty for $330,000.
Right. And that could wipe you out.
That's crazy. And though, so trust me, if that ever did happen, so I just think it's just, it's good. But so you don't have to do it. And that's a good thing for right now. So we've told all of our clients to just sort of hold tight.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to file, it's fine. I don't know that it's going to hurt. I mean, nothing's going to hurt them. The issue is really is just giving more information to the government that some people don't really want to do.
Yeah, exactly. So. And then, of course, what you say, the fear of the unknown, because if people don't know, a lot of people are not socially savvy, and so they're not following these things, and they didn't make a great outreach like anybody who had an LLC gets a letter to their door. Like, none of that happened.
Right. Ohio didn't send it out to all
participants.
So the other thing that's going to be interesting is that if it is – If the two court cases are struck down and I think it's going to go probably to the Supreme Court. I think eventually it's going to have to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the question is, if the cases lose and FinCEN wins, then what does that mean? How long do you have to comply?
Scrambling, maybe.
Do they move the dates?
Mm-hmm.
They could move the dates a year. I think if I was, if I had any sense of decency, I would argue that, we'll back it up for a year. All the dates will move 1 year down the road, and then mm-hmm. you would be okay. And then it would have been settled at that point, and everybody knows you just got to do it or you don't have to do it.
And as long as it's not retroactive, I think if people are aware, that it gives more people time to become aware about this particular filing. And it's, of course, always that thought out there was the government, what are they going to do to my information? They don't keep things top secret very well. So maybe you don't want to be found. Isn't that part
but
of
they
the
also
layers?
They also have, I mean, they have your driver's license information when you electronically file.
Mm-hmm.
They have your social security number, your address, all that. And that's a different department. And listen, if hackers can break into the CIA, they can break into the FBI. You know, it's gonna happen, and that'll happen. It's not a problem. I mean, you just have to deal with it. And it's just sort of intrusive.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And so that takes us off to a good start. We're going to be right back after this break. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Real Life Real Estate Investing. And no, this is not Vina. I'm your host, Tiffany Wright, today, and I'm sharing the studio with Scott Ellsworth of Ellsworth & Associates. And we're talking today about all things strategy, tax strategy. And what we were just wrapping up was talking about the filing for the beneficial interest on the Corporate Transparency Act. And what Scott was sharing is if you need more information, you might want to go to the FinCEN website. But we are saying that injunction is in place, and we can just stay tuned. We don't have to file that by the dread December 31st. So, Scott, keeping in the spirit of all things end of year, I know that there are a whole lot of things that happen for us real estate investors and people who own small businesses. And at the end of 24, you kind of review your big purchases, see if there's anything that may qualify for Section 179 or those types of things. What do you think might be a good idea as far as the strategy for properties and things that people need to review to make sure that they're ready for the tax season coming up in 2025?
So there's two pieces to being ready. One is you want to be and you have your records in good shape. Too many people do not. Investors are entrepreneurs are great at investing in entrepreneur and making deals. But when it comes to the details of keeping records, unless they were a prior CPA, a prior engineer, and they're just really crazy meticulous, they just don't keep good records.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll give you an idea that I had a client of mine who came last year. We don't really have new clients, but this is part of a bigger group that we do. And he was with a larger firm, and they told him at the beginning of last year is, hey, we're lower on staff, and we're cutting you. Mm-hmm. So he came to me, said, will you do it? And I generally have a policy that we'll do it if it's part of the bigger group. So I did. I said, you had an S corp, and I said, well, what kind of records, what kind of bookkeeping system you have. He goes, I just give him my credit card statements and that. And I go, well, that's why you got fired. So, and CPAs and enrolled agents and tax preparation folks, they will fire clients. Everybody's getting to a point where like, I'm not going to go with last minute stuff. They're just not going to do it. And because what happens with a, you got to understand what happens with them is, if they have to spend 12 hours trying to help clean up your books, they can't do that in the middle of tax season. And then you get past tax season, you get extended, and then they've got other work that they've been holding off on doing. So it becomes very hard to get your work done timely, and you end up coming to the, to the end, and it's very hard. It's very tough. So to keep it good, so you want to have good records. You really want to have an accounting system. Now I would say that if you've just got two rentals, you don't have to spend money on an accounting system. There are some that are they're essentially free. I would say that they're not the best if you have a partnership or anything like that. But an individual can use them because an individual doesn't have to have what's called a balance sheet. Mm-hmm. You might know of those. If you go over a bank loan, right, you have a personal balance sheet that they want to see your assets, your liabilities, and that calculates your net worth. Well, also, an accounting system helps make sure that all the records are in there and everything is tied out and clean. And it does cost money unless you use the free ones. So there are a lot of, you know, investors are, we'll call them frugal.
Yes.
But they're actually cheap. And nobody wants to spend the money. I get it. I always tell clients, hey, I want you to make money before you go spend a bunch of money. But there are some things that are necessary, mm-hmm. and they could be considered necessary evil because you don't like it. But accounting system is one of those things, and you just need to do it. And maybe you get, like I said, get a free one, or get something like a QuickBooks or a Buildium or AppFolio or anything like that, depending on what kind of business you're in. So I do recommend you do that. Now, the problem is you're at December, what's today's the 18th?
Yeah, something like that.
So the problem is you've got to get all this stuff for the whole year. Mm-hmm. That becomes, and the problem is if you haven't done anything yet, I procrastinate on stuff too. But I think everybody procrastinates. There are probably some out there who are supermen or super ladies who just never procrastinate. But so we all have stuff we procrastinate on. And when you do that, you just don't want to do it. You keep putting it off. So I do recommend breaking that time, spending the time with that, excuse me, and do it on a weekly basis. Set aside 4 hours and get your stuff all caught up. If you don't have an accounting system, you can put it on a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely recommend that. I won't go into a lot of the detail on it, but basically you need to get those records in order so that your CPA or enrolled agent or other tax professional can actually sit down with your stuff. They know it's clean, it's good, and they can do it. And so that would be the primary from a standpoint of keeping your CPA happy. It lets your return get done faster. It costs you less. Definitely recommend it.
So I know the paper monster is real. So you speak to me when you say make sure your files are in good shape. I have my own definite piles of filing system. But coming from the banking background, it's interesting that you would say do it weekly. And I practice it pretty much weekly now. But we definitely had a plan in place, and we call it a month-end closeout. And at the end of the month, you take literally the first 1, 2, 3 days, depending on how much you had going on, to make sure that everything tied out, everything balanced. And there was kind of a checklist for that. And then we also had this thing that was like, know your numbers, because if you don't have all that information tied out, you're not able to answer questions about how you get additional loans. What is your net worth? Or people need to know those types of things when you're asking for loans and building your credibility profile, and you have no idea. So all of what you're saying rings really true.
Yeah, you hit it right on the nose, because at this time of the year, everybody's thinking taxes.
Yep.
But the reality is, if you don't have an accounting system, you don't have your books, mm-hmm. how do you know how you're doing? I mean, you can look at your checking account, but I can tell you there's lots of examples. I won't go into all of them now, but where it looks like you are just killing it,
mm-hmm.
and you're not. You're slowly going down mm-hmm. that drain, and you're going to have a real problem. And so you really need, if you really are a business, okay, if you're just a hobby and you have a couple of rentals, you know, that's fine. I mean, you want to do that. But if you're building a business, real estate investor, and that's a business, it's not just an investor, you are a business, then you need to know your numbers, and you need to know them regularly. It's too hard. A change you could have made in March, mm-hmm. you're now not calculating your numbers till the following March. I mean, that's crazy. That's a year later. Well, what the tiny change you could have made to counteract things, you don't know about it.
Exactly. That's called planning and strategy, guys. And it's all about strategy, not just seizing the bag and getting the house or flipping the property.
Exactly.
Yes, all year long. So that's great. I want to remind you guys that we have open mic right now, so I don't think we have any calls. I'm looking at the board. The number is 1-877-772-9658. And I do believe we have a couple of questions. So are you ready for a question?
Sure.
Or so? Okay. So this one is from Jim Mills. And Jim says, hey, Scott, what should I look for in an accountant who understands real estate? So that's part one. It seems like most of the great tax advantages are for people who do real estate full time. And are there advantages if we still have a W-2? So very loaded question.
Sure. So what was the first one?
Looking for –
Okay. What do you look for? So – you really need to be able to find out from that person how many real estate clients do they actually have, and what kind of real estate did they do? Do they do rentals? Do they do options? Do they buy notes? Do they flip properties? There are all sorts of things that people are doing. Do they do stuff? Your accountant doesn't have to know a lot about doing stuff in retirement accounts, because that part of it they don't really have to deal with. And I will tell you that if your accountant is doing preparation, they honestly don't be too hard on them. They probably don't have a lot of time to actually do planning and strategy. Some people look at that and they go, my accountant, my taxpayer's not giving me any advice. Well, he doesn't have any time. She doesn't have any time. It's getting very hard to find the folks that want to do it or that will do it. I mean, we got out of the mm-hmm. prep side. So look for one, find out, see what kind of experience they've had with different clients. And again, they're not going to give you their names. You don't want their names. What you want to know is, you know, I've done people who buy and sell options. I've done people who flip houses. I've got, you know, five clients that actually, you know, flip houses and we do their returns. That type of thing is what you want to look for in a prepare or CPA.
Yeah, definitely sage advice. And you bring me to another question, but I'll finish his stuff first. But you said something about IRAs, and you also said something about tax strategy and planning is definitely fundamentally different from just preparation. So I want to go back to that. So I'm putting it on your mind for
That's
a second.
Fine.
But the second part of Jim's question is, it seems like most of the great tax advantages are for people who do real estate full time. So are there any advantages if they don't and if they still have a W-2?
Sure. So it is people who are in business and who have rental property have the most opportunity for tax savings. It's just if you're just W-2 job and you got two kids and a house, and I mean, there's not a lot we can do. There's some basic things we can do, but not a lot. So the problem with real estate is that prior to 1986, you could write off all this depreciation. You could have all these losses and everything. Well, the administration at the time, the Congress at the time decided we're going to put a stop to that, got tired of all the phantom losses and stuff like that everybody hears about. And so they said you can only write off real estate losses if you're a real estate professional. Okay, there are some exceptions. One of the exceptions is that if you make less than $100,000, you can write off $25,000 worth of losses. So if you make less than $100,000, then that's going to be a good opportunity that you still get some losses and you'll be able to deduct it. At that level, your income brackets are lower,
mm-hmm.
so the IRS doesn't have as much to lose, right? They're going to lose, you know, 12% on your deductions. So that's the case. There are some opportunities to do stuff if you have a W-2 income, but a lot of those require some work. If you want to do it, and I've had like a doctor made $500,000 and he wanted tax savings. So he ended up buying some short-term rentals,
mm-hmm.
and you have to meet some requirements, but there are some requirements you can meet for those, and we could talk that after the next break maybe. But those criteria that you meet allow you to deduct the losses that the real estate produces against your W-2 income, because short-term rentals are in a different class of property. And so we've had that where a guy at P&G made $250,000. He bought a short-term rental. he basically got to a point where he met all the criteria. He met, there's some hour criteria and things like that. He did that. It met the requirements of a short-term rental. He was materially participating. And so he literally did a cost segregation, which we can talk about that too. But that allowed him to take a write-off of $125,000
wow.
against his $250,000. And that was awesome. So there have been, though, where the accountants with him didn't understand that. And they said, you can't do it. And we had to talk to their accountant and explain to him that they can, and showed him the regulations and things like that.
Wow, that was a loaded question. Thanks, Jim. We're going to come back to a few of those thoughts and strategies that Scott was sharing with us. But first, we're going to take a break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Live Real Estate Investing. And if you've just now tuned in, I am your host, Tiffany Ray, and I'm talking today with Scott Ellsworth. We're having a strategy conversation about all things taxes around real estate and things that you should do to care for your business, your real estate business, before the beginning of or the end of the year is up, so that you can start your 2025 strong. And just before the break, we were talking about tax strategy for the end of the year if you have a W-2, because the actual tax advantages seem to be less, in particular if you're a real estate investor. And so we were talking about a short-term rental meeting some type of criteria, and I think you said something about cost segregation. Was that the terminology you used?
Yeah. So cost segregation is the act of let's say you're buying a house. You really aren't buying a house. Or let's take a four family. It's the same thing for a house. Let's take a four family. What you really bought with that four family is you bought four sets of cabinets, four countertops. You got four sets of appliances. You've got four apartments full of carpet or LVP or LVT. You've got all that. It's four of those. You've got an outside. You've got a sidewalk. You've got a driveway. You've got a fence. You got a retaining wall. You got a sprinkler system. You know, you got a deck. All those things are considered land improvements when they're outside of the house. Even landscaping. I always tell people is if God didn't place it there, then you can deduct it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is we take that house and we break it into all of its components. And so some people refer to it as componentizing depreciation. And a cost segregation does that, essentially. You have that done by a professional. And what that'll do is, so everything inside the house, typically, this is not, let's not make it a blanket statement, but it's pretty close. Things that are inside the house that are shorter lived are 5-year property. So normally if I buy a house, there's land. So the normal way that most accountants will do it, tax professionals will do it, is they will say, okay, you bought it for 100, then they'll say you have $20,000 worth of land. They'll either go off of the auditor's site, which is woefully inaccurate, or they'll choose a 20% number, which typically a lot of the the county auditor sites do.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do it that way. So what happens is the land is not depreciable. You have to just that, but it's, you'll get it back in the end when you sell it, because you haven't depreciated any of the land. That whole amount gets used to offset any profit that you have in the property. But the other items then would be 27.5 years. Well, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, if you do the cost segregation, the inside assets, the appliances, countertops, chandeliers, blinds, carpet, all that kind of stuff, that is going to be 5 years. You could write that off over 5 years. And even that's accelerated because it's 20% the first year, 40% the second year. And then it's like a bell curve. It'll go up, and then at the end you'll tail off and you'll get lower deductions later on. And then the outside stuff, the land improvements, Those are all 15-year property. So you get to write that off over 15 years. That's still a long time, so I like 5 years instead of 15. But everything is much better than 27.5. Now, we've had a thing called bonus depreciation. That has actually been around before they changed the tax rules in at the end of 17 for 2028 for 2018. But it was 50% bonus depreciation back in 2017. 2018 all the way through 22, it was 100%. So you could write off 100% of that 5 year and 15 year property. So if I had $120,000 house and $20,000 was land, which again, I don't propose that's a good percentage, but so I have $100,000. I would usually typically see anywhere between 15% and 25% as assets that were 5 year or 15 year property. Mm-hmm. So bonus depreciation typically has to do with asset classes that are less than 20 years. So you would have that. In that case, $100,000 depreciable house, I'd get $20,000 deduction potentially if I just took a, you know, middle of the road between 15 and 25, 20%, that's $20,000. I get to write that off. Again, if I'm a real estate professional, that's going to help me the best. However, if I have a short-term rental and I materially participate, then I can write that off against my W-2 income. So when we do a cost segregation, the other benefit of cost segregation is that well, let me step back. So in addition to that $20,000, so 2018 to 2022, I could write off 100% of that $20,000 of first year. So that's great. Then in 2023, it dropped 80%. And then in 2024, it's 60%. And next year, it'll be 40%. And then after 25, unless they fix the tax cliff that we're heading towards, it should go back to 50% as it was in 17, unless that was going to sunset. So I'd have to check, but that's what you would end up with, at that time. If the new administration that comes in, that very easily could get extended. Mm-hmm. It almost was extended to 100%, but some people were very short-sighted in the Senate, and nixed the, a plan that was somewhat bipartisan. They sort of negotiated and compromised, and we could have had it back, but they didn't. So it sort of killed a lot of people. So that's cost segregation. The other thing it does is that if you, because remember, 27, everything else is 27 and a half years. Your roof's 27 and a half years. Your water heater is 27 and a half years. What water heater? Now, if you have an old water heater, then it probably still is working well because they used to make water heaters that would last for 30 years. So water heaters today, they're not going to last that long. They're more efficient. It's great, but they don't last as long. So same thing with a furnace. I can go into a place that's got a furnace that's 40 years old and mm-hmm. they just are still just chugging along. Not very efficient, but they're just chugging along. So those are definitely, you know, those are items. And the roof, yeah, sure, it lasts 27 years. But when you buy a house, that roof, unless it's brand new, is not going to last 27 That's years. Right. So the benefit of the cost seg is also not only do you find the 5 year and 15 year property that you can write off quicker, but in addition, you find out what the calculation is, what's your roof worth. So let's say my roof is worth $2,700. That's all it's worth. So if I said it was $2,700, I would basically write off over 27 and a half years. I'd write off $100 a year. So after 10 years, I've only written off $1,000. But then if I go put a new roof on at the end of 10 years, when I tear the old roof off and throw it away, I can now write off whatever I haven't depreciated.
Oh, nice.
So if it was $2,700, I'd written off $1,000. I would get a deduction that year when I rip it off of $1,700. Because you have actually thrown it away. You've abandoned it and disposed of it. Mm-hmm. So that definitely has it. And the same thing with your water heater and your furnace and things like that. So, and windows. Windows, the same deal. It will allocate amounts to windows and siding. So when you replace that stuff, you know what you can write off at that time.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's exciting news. And you said that's called cost segregation. And it does need to be done by a professional. I heard you say that earlier.
It does. And the nice thing about it is you have to buy the property in 2024, you don't have to have the cross segregation study done. And you just have to have it done before you tax return.
Okay.
And you can even go back, a little bit more complicated for this call today, but you can actually go back to old properties you haven't done cost segregation mm-hmm. on, and you can do it, and then you can get a big catch-up deduction.
That's nice.
In the year that you do that cost seg on all the old properties.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. I'm going to take one more question from the email. This is from Anonymous, and this person apparently works for USPS. And the question is, can you deduct the care of your uniforms if you work for USPS?
So that's what would be called an unreimbursed employee business expense. Problem is, at the end of 27, they got rid of all those. Plus, they upped the itemized or the standard deduction. So let's say right now the standard deduction is about $28,000. So where before, at this point, maybe it'd be about $14,000. A lot of people did itemize.
Mm-hmm.
But even with the unreimbursed employee and business expenses, you just don't get the deduction now. But even when it was available, so in 17 was available, it had all your unreimbursed employee business expenses plus like subscriptions to Kiplinger, things like that, had to all of those at a point you couldn't really deduct them because you had to get above 2% of your income. So if you made $100,000, the first $2,000 wasn't even deductible. So it was only a dollar after that it was started to be deductible. So that is the difference. So no, unfortunately, you can't do that right now. Potentially in 25, maybe you will.
Maybe it'll be
26.
Yeah,
who knows? We don't know.
Got to give it a little time.
Yep.
So there seems to be a caller on the line. Hey, Bruce from St. Louis, are you there?
Hello, Tiffany. How are you?
I'm good today. How about yourself?
Oh, I wish it wasn't so cold. I think we all ought to move to Florida, but then that's another story.
It's winter.
Yeah,
it's
Scott,
December.
Is it that's supposed to happen in winter?
That's how that works.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
Where are you looking? St. Louis.
So the Julian calendar? To St. Louis, yeah. We can change the calendar so we can skip winter every year. I've gotten to that point where I'm old enough. It's like, no, not anymore. Okay, I don't like that. But anyway, Scott did mention something about having a professional, and you repeated that. Mm-hmm. Could somebody like Jerry Fink do that, though, who's an expert in houses? And I'm looking at something that I looked up just to figure it out, but the Association of Home Builders says there's as many as 3,000 different components that go into a new home, and I'm not sure how many components the IRS, you know, breaks it up into. And it was there something other than a 5 and a 15-year tier, like Scott said, for depreciation? Along with that, he said we've got till taxes are due before we have to actually get a survey and componentize as long as the property was placed into service, 24 or 4 or whatever, depending on how that works. Went too far and I forgot what I was talking about. sounds familiar. So we're still limited to $25,000 if we're quote a non-professional, but I think the IRS says something like you have to spend X amount of hours, so it's like 14 hours a week in order to be declared a professional.
Okay, so let's take it to the first question.
Okay.
You said could Jerry Fink do it? So.
Yep.
Jerry, so if you're doing, he's not probably skilled enough to know how to calculate the cost of certain things. Like, for instance, the plug that your refrigerator is plugged into and that plug and the wire that goes through the wall all the way back and the breaker for that refrigerator, that's all part of the refrigerator. The problem is, Jerry's not going to be able to calculate that. I can't calculate that. Now,
I think Jerry's smart enough to componentize. He knows how much it costs, or contractors do too. So I don't know.
Well,
yeah,
it's
so I'm getting to the basis of you absolutely need a professional to do it, or can you get a contractor who's smart enough?
No, I mean you could try. I'm just telling you that if you get audited, they're going to want to have a lot of information And right. so like, for instance, what we do, we partner with an engineering firm who they have engineers on staff who they can take drawings and they can take a property and they will calculate using an algorithm if it's already built and there's no drawings or anything like that to come up with what that amount is. Again, Jerry or a contractor is not going to, I seriously doubt they're going to be able to say the refrigerator is worth this and the outlet and the wire all the way back plus labor to install it was this amount. Could they do it? Yes, but it probably cost you a fortune. So what I would say is, like, for instance, we license software from the engineer, and then we do what's called a desk cost segregation, which means we don't go out, we don't take pictures. We have the investor fill out a form to say how many square feet is a lot, how many lineal feet of fence is there, are there ceiling fans, all this kind of stuff. It's a very simple form, a couple pages for an investor to fill out, and we can come up with a pretty good cost segregation for anything that is typically 6 units or less and less than $1.2 million in basis, which for a lot of real estate investors, that would cover most 4 families, 6 families, and houses, even the nicer houses that would cover that. And they can be done at a reasonable cost versus an engineer. I know people get a little bit whacked out about having to hire an expensive engineer to do that, but they would be able to do it. There are some oddball little things, but most of the lifes are 5 year, 15 year, and then you got the 27 and a half year. So it really,
three-year thing. Then I was thinking I heard of 3 year somewhere back when.
So there is for like software. Software would be 3 years. I would probably push. I have pushed computers to 3 years. So there are some guidance as far as what falls into what. But normally, like I said, if you think about it, even cabinets and countertop, they give you 5 years. But the reality is, I mean, that stuff's going to last for a longer time.
Yeah, and I guess I missed the first 2 minutes. And if you don't have anything set up now, would it be a good idea to put it in an LLC, S corp, or a trust? Something, would that benefit you tax wise?
There's not a benefit tax wise. The LLC is going to give you asset protection. Never put. I will tell you, there's a tax detriment if you put it in an S corp. Do not put a piece of property in an S corp. You're better off to even own it outright and then lease that property to your business if you're an S corp corporation. So,
Did
we answer all your questions,
Bruce? Thank you very
much. Okay. Thank you for calling
in. Well, yeah, for now, I might think of something else later. But.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
We're going to take a break. We'll take a break. Be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Real Live Real Estate Investing, your host, Tiffany Ray, talking with Scott about all things taxed and a little bit of real estate involved. And so we've been talking about all this year-end stuff, getting prep and getting ready and how to start the year off strong. But I guess there are a few more things we could probably talk about, and that's maybe retirement accounts, self-directed IRA, say that 5 times fast, 401s, HSAs, those types of things. Is it too late, Scott, to be thinking about that for an investment? Or
no, you've got there's a myriad of options for real estate for investors. So I think there are two ones people think about. There are some other ones. There's SEP IRAs and things like that, and SAR SEPs and stuff like that. However, most of what you're going to encounter or that you would want to do would either be just a standard IRA, could be and it can be a Roth or traditional, or the big one is a 401k. A lot of people think that a 401k for themselves, everybody thinks 401k, they think very expensive to run, but they have something called a solo 401k, which as long as you don't have employees, then it's not expensive to administer. And there's a lot of groups that will do that, both for the non-traditional assets like we have in real estate, and even they will do that with just if you have stocks, bonds, mutual funds, things like that. So that is a great way to do it. Now, to have a solo 401k, you need to have earned income. Even an IRA and Roth require earned income. The difference between an IRA and a Roth, a traditional IRA and a Roth IRA, that earned income can take the form of your W-2 wages mm-hmm. from your employer if you work for P&G or GE or whoever like that. However, the way to do it, if you have a business, so by the way, rental property is not a business earned. It's not earned income. It is a business because there will be the tax code is great. It's so simplistic that they have, if you read trade or business in one section, it means something different in another section of the code. even though a rental property would be a trade or business, the reality is that it's not earned income. And you need earned income to be contributing to retirement plans. But if you can have that earned income, great way to put money aside. And you can still set those up now. You can contribute with the solo 401k. You'd be able to contribute to that, depending on how you're structured. We're not talking – so there's some caveats here. Don't take me literal. But for the most part, I can contribute to my solo 401k just as long as I do it by the time I file my return, even with extensions.
Nice.
IRAs, Roth IRAs, traditional IRAs, you're limited. You got to do it by 4/15. You got to do it by that original due date of your return. But the other retirement plans, a lot of those, you can do those much later if you've extended your return. Those aren't a problem. And I think that's a great way to do it. You can put a lot of money in those retirement accounts.
Yeah, and that gives us a little time for those of us who would be people filing extensions because we just don't want to do the dread taxes. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Let's talk about New Year's resolutions for a second. So if you're a part of RIA, we have what we call Express Success. And if you're a student of that, we kind of talk about to pitch those resolutions out the window and kind of get a vision for what you want your life and setting some goals and some to-dos. But Sky had talked earlier about making sure your books are in order for the end of the year in an accounting system. What other thoughts do you like? I've done all these things and I'm in good shape, but here comes 2025 and I want some things to make sure that as I grow my business, I'm going to start it off right and save myself some money.
Yeah, I think, to me, it really is. I know it sounds just horrible that we're talking about this, but it's records. It's documentation. That's what's going to get you. That's going to make sure that you get all the deductions you're entitled to because you're going to miss them. If you're just trying to comb through credit card statements and bank statements, you're going to miss stuff. And that I think is a shame. People will do that. I would try to find a way to invest in an accounting system. Again, there are some freebie ones. And if you're not a partnership or an S corp, you don't have to have a balance sheet. It doesn't have to be. It still needs to be in order, and I think I still would have a balance sheet. So I like, there's just some products out there that do that. But that's the biggest thing on that. The other thing on, as you go into the year, see where you think you're going to be. I mean, you've got some projections. Mm-hmm. You've got some goals, I assume. And so depending on what those are, that will affect both – the record keeping, if you're going to grow your portfolio and your rental property, you're going to run a rental management system. You can do a combination with some freebie sites out there. I don't know if I'm supposed to list them here. So
you can tell us what you like, maybe. So
there are some freebie sites for the mm-hmm. actual tenant portals.
Yep.
And then a lot of people will. Big in here. I don't think this is a promotion, but the big girl in the room is obviously like a QuickBooks.
Yeah.
And there's some rentals things like Build a Netfolio. So those are all, as you look to where you're going to be, you want to invest in those and determine if you're going to do strategies like short-term rentals.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to buy, let's talk about doing a cost segregation. You want to start looking at that and getting them done. A lot of times if you can get that stuff done too before the end of the year, it's not that you have to do a lot of it before the end of the year, but you'll definitely want to do it because it can be – you can get in the queue and get it done a lot quicker than if you try to do it during tax season. There are trying to think of some other things offhand I can tell you.
But what you said was great. We talked about performance indicators, and we talked about risk indicators and how to make sure that we're doing sound business. And so I know that I'm looking at my person teeing me up here, and he's telling us we're at the top of the hour. So we really, really do appreciate Scott for coming out again. Again, we're both avid members of RIA. But, Scott, tell us how we can connect with you and see all these things you're doing out here in this strategy, tax strategy planning area. Is that your email or site?
You can email us at info@ellsworthcpa.com. That's two L's.
Fantastic. And we appreciate you guys. Happy investing. Happy holidays. And this is Tiffany signing off. Real Life Real Estate Investing. Take care.